The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, there's some interesting things going on in the air over the Middle East over the weekend. The first of which was that the Pope was permitted to fly through Israeli airspace on his way to his visit in Iraq. And as he entered Israeli airspace, he had a message for President Rivlin, which goes as follows: to His Excellency Reuven Rivlin, President of the State of Israel, entering Israeli airspace on my apostolic journey to Iraq, I send warm regards, greetings to you and the people of the nation, praying that Almighty God will bless you all with His gift of harmony and peace, Franciscus Papa. So that was a message from the Pope from the air over Israel over the weekend to
Incredible.
The President.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing was that it was Israeli F-15 fighter jets that were escorting two American B-52 bombers through Israeli airspace yesterday as they were on their way to show a little bit of strength to Iran. This is what we understand, mm-hmm. that the idea of these B-52s being flown around the Gulf area is really the American way of trying to show a little bit of military strength. But it was Israeli fighter jets that were invited to accompany the B-52s as they flew through Israeli airspace. So another interesting little interlude over the skies of Israel over the weekend.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. And I guess that's why Iranian foreign minister is saying that they will raise Tel Aviv and Haifa to the ground if Israel threatens them.
Well, nothing new really, right? I mean, this is just the same rhetoric that we've seen from Iran over the years. And of course, with the current uncertain situation that Iran finds itself in with regard to the nuclear agreement and how the U.S. administration is going to respond to that, there were indications that the U.S. administration was very much inclined to re-enter the nuclear agreement and to recommit itself to adhering to its rules and potentially in the process also reduce some of the sanctions that have been imposed on Iran. At the moment, though, that seems to be unclear. At least no clear decision has been made about that. And so I think the Iranians are trying both the carrot and the stick approach to try and threaten. And of course, it's easy to threaten Israel and indirectly threaten the United States without actually threatening the United States. I think that that's the way of trying to show some strength to try to threaten a U.S. ally and indirectly trying to somehow show a threat to the U.S., which seems to be a ridiculous thing to do, but that seems to be the way that they want to do things at the moment.
A number of international leaders have visited Israel recently to try and learn lessons from Israel's vaccination experiment and experience. Who have the visitors been?
Well, one of the visitors who's not been in Israel and who was scheduled to visit here is Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla, who's been in the news a lot because of his family links with the Shoah and how people have interpreted that to be linked to the way in which Israel has been provided with large doses of the Pfizer vaccine. He was due to have visited Israel last week, and the reason that he didn't visit Israel is because he's not fully vaccinated.
I love
apparently.
That story. I love the fact that he didn't want to cut the line. That to me
he didn't
was
want
so
to cut
impressive.
The line, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I was wondering whether it's a bit like going to a restaurant kitchen and finding the chefs hungry. I just wonder why he's not being vaccinated. Yeah, he didn't want to cut the line. Okay, with two vaccinations, I'm not sure. Anyway, he's not visiting, but a number of other people have been visiting, including the Prime Minister and the President from Denmark and also from Austria, who were in Israel at the end of last week. Austria's Chancellor, Sebastian Kurz, traveled with Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen to try to expand cooperation on the handling of the coronavirus pandemic. And in particular, they apparently want to set up some sort of a vaccination partnership, which includes research and production of vaccines and drugs that will help to accelerate the production, the procurement of vaccines. They are very frustrated with what's going on in the European Union with respect to the implementation of the vaccination program and the distribution of vaccines in particular. It doesn't seem to be going particularly smoothly. And so they are now coming here to Israel to learn lessons about Israel's methods being used, first of all, to distribute the vaccines. I'm guessing that people are also going to want to know how Israel managed to get their hands on so many vaccines, so many doses of the vaccine. That will be a separate discussion, I'm guessing. But I think that there is not only an immediate issue about how to get people vaccinated right now, but I think there is also a longer-term view as to what's going to happen hereafter and whether people are going to need to continue to be vaccinated and how that's going to present itself and how we're going to continue to make sure that people are vaccinated against this on a long-term basis. And I think that that's quite an interesting discussion. In addition to our Austrian and Danish friends, we also have a delegation from Brazil here, which includes the son of the president of Brazil, who is representing quite a number of departments of the Brazilian government, members of the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee in the Congress, and members, representatives from Brazil's Ministries of Health and Science, have come along to Israel to learn about Israel's treatment of people who have been infected with the virus. And this trial that was conducted quite successfully, which we discussed a number of weeks ago, about treating people who are severely ill, critically ill, and using a certain cocktail of drugs that's been put together in Ichilov Hospital. And the Brazilian delegation is here at the moment, arrived yesterday, to learn a little bit more about that. We know that there's a very serious variant, one of many, that has broken out in Brazil, and people are apparently struggling to get their hands on things. So we have had quite a number of visitors. These are just some of the many who have come along here, first of all, to see how Israel has been treating those infected and also to learn a lot about the vaccination program, because as Albert Bula himself said, Israel is kind of like the laboratory in terms of the world's laboratory for testing the vaccination. And I think it's gone quite successfully. There was an interesting article about how many cases of the reaction there were to the Pfizer virus that's been administered to almost 5 million Israelis now, at least first dose of the virus, almost 5 million people. Different numbers suggesting how well vaccinated we are. The Prime Minister seemed to think that something like 90% of people who are eligible to be vaccinated have already been vaccinated. I think that that sounds a little bit too high, but certainly the numbers are pretty high in terms of those who are eligible to be vaccinated. But interestingly, there were only something like 80 or 90 cases of people who had quite serious reactions to the vaccination, 73 cases apparently of facial paralysis and 7 cases of anaphylactic shock. The facial paralysis, I understand, is temporary and not a permanent paralysis. So there are already statistics about all kinds of side effects that people have suffered. I know that when I was vaccinated, I immediately got a WhatsApp message to ask me whether I suffered from any side effects and how I felt and where, you know, the issues were, if my arm was sore and how it was sore, and lots of questions, which were obviously being collected as part of some of the scientific research that's been gathered up here to try to somehow help the pharmaceutical companies in particular, because I think that that's the deal that Israel entered into with Pfizer, was that we would get these huge quantities of the vaccine, in return for which we would provide Pfizer with some scientific research about how people have reacted, and I think that that's certainly part of it. So apparently very, very few people, 100, they had, I see a number here which says 162 had serious side effects from the second dose out of 3.5 million, which seems to be a very, very small, you know, a number of people, relatively speaking. So some quite interesting things going on now with regard to the research and the development and the thoughts about where we go beyond the initial vaccination and what's going to be the steady state ongoing situation.
Yeah, but it is incredible, because you got the sense yesterday that Israel is just past this whole COVID thing. And obviously it's not fully past it, and there's the rest of the world and people coming in and out, and people aren't allowed to travel to the extent, etc. But you really do get the sense that this has been dealt with.
Well, I hope that's correct. I mean, you know, to put things into perspective, we've now reopened restaurants. There was a lot of celebration yesterday as restaurants finally opened their doors to patrons, allowing people to come and actually sit down outside mostly, but also for some people inside to a limited extent. So there is certainly a reopening of the economy, and there is a feeling that things are getting back to some relative sense of what they used to be before all of this. But obviously things are not over yet. We still do have new infections. More than 1,000 were counted, I think, in the last day that I saw. And there are still something like 700 odd people who are seriously ill in hospital. The numbers are decreased and decreasing, perhaps not as quickly as we would like them to. And also talk about a lockdown over Pesach. There's now, you know, we're now onto the next Pesach, and discussions about how that's going to happen. And there are discussions about whether there should be some sort of a curfew, at least for Seder night, to prevent people from getting together. But I think people are now so hungry to feel that getting together. Talks about potentially removing face masks when you are outdoors. There was an article that I saw which suggested that the use of face masks when outside is not really as nearly as effective.
Yeah, I saw that.
As people
that was interesting.
Might think so. So I'm not sure how true that is. I mean, when you go out, you certainly see everybody wearing face masks. That's become a standard that we've come to expect, not only here, but I'm guessing around the world as well. I think there is a feeling that we are kind of getting past it, but we are still a little concerned about how this reopening may yet affect the numbers in another week or two. I don't think that we're yet past the moment where we can honestly say, yes, we are through it. The vaccinations have worked, you know, that we've limited the extent to which there's a new outbreak as a result of so many people being vaccinated. But I certainly hope that within the next week or two, I'll be able to say to you guys, yeah, I think we are definitely through it.
Amazing. Rumor persists that Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas may still cancel the presidential elections that have been called for in July. Why would he do this?
Well, this is called Palestinian democracy at its best. If you think you can't win at the ballot, then just cancel the election. I think that's the concept.
Yeah, look, it's not a bad strategy. It's definitely a winning strategy.
It's definitely a winning strategy, and it's worked for the last 15 years because there hasn't been an election for 15 years. Mahmoud Abbas is now 85 years old, and he is reputed not to be in particularly good health, and he's also suffering from what's described as a growing rift within his Fatah party that potentially poses a new threat to his dominance over Palestinian politics. It seems as if though he thought that he was going to be a shoe-in, at least as a representative of the Fatah party for the presidential election. But we do know that lurking in the background is the name of Marwan Barghouti, who is also a member of Fatah. He is serving 5 life sentences in an Israeli jail for terrorist activity, for having been involved in the deaths of people due to terror activities that he was conducting. But even from jail, he has a huge following, and people are looking at him as a potential successor, although I don't know how that exactly would work.
But people are
looking at that he could potentially win this election from his prison cell. And that would be an interesting thing for the Palestinian Authority to deal with, and for Mahmoud Abbas in particular, because I'm not sure how that would play out. But there's also now a new player, a long-time member of Fatah's top central committee, who announced that he was forming a new list that would potentially run separately from Fatah in the legislative election, which is due to take place next month. In May, and potentially could also be a threat to Mahmoud Abbas. He comes in the form of Nasser al-Qudwa, not a name that we've come across necessarily before, but he is quite well known, and he is apparently a nephew of the former PLO and Palestinian Authority leader Yasser Arafat. So he has some family links with some sort of royal family as far as Palestinian politics is concerned. So the rumor is that Abbas might just say, look, this looks all too difficult. It looks like I'm not going to win the election. Let's just cancel it and we'll just carry on as we have been up until now, which is actually something that he has done before and cannot be ruled out this time as well.
Before I let you go, I just want to address this. Moshe says, sure, Howard, he didn't want to cut the line. We're talking about Pfizer CEO. He says, that's naive. Maybe he knows something that everybody else doesn't. A chef doesn't eat food when he knows that there's something wrong with it. Maybe it's a bit more journalism should be done in finding out why he isn't having the world's historical vaccine. That's Moshe. No, so Moshe, just so you know, he has had the one. He has had the first one. He hasn't had the second one because he was allowed it in terms of age and what have you. So he has had the first one, but not the second. That was the real story there. It's about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, more subjects we wanted to chat about, but we'll continue with those conversations tomorrow at 7:45.